Kathy back, and it's great to have you both. And we've enjoyed being with you here. Picked you up at Friday night, had some dinner last night, the workshop yesterday, and then now we have the privilege of all hearing from you. Maybe as a way to provide some background, last year you were here, Chad, you told your story, and I think whether people would like to get their mind right around the story or weren't here and want to hear it, maybe each of you could share a little bit of background on your story and just give us a little history of what's gone on in your life.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me back. It's great to see everyone at church again.
Yeah.
Had a great day yesterday, and I guess a little bit about our story would probably start with from my family. Outside of our marriage, I have a three-generation Marine Corps family. So my father was a Marine, myself, and then my son, Hunter.
Yep.
All joined the Marine Corps when we were 17 years old. So the military is a big part of our family, big part of our life. I went to Afghanistan over 8 deployments. I was part of a JSOC task force as a Force Recon Marine. And during that time, I started developing some of the problems that many of our military warriors face today. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, came home, and my family faced the hardships of that. Kathy had to deal with a husband that was angry, there was a point where the PTSD, there was panic attacks and overwhelming anxiety and depression, and almost led to our divorce. There was an affair on my part, and then there was separation, which led us to a rock bottom point in our marriage and in my life, and it was during that time that I almost took my life. And it was Kathy that came in and intervened and stepped in and really challenged me. We talked yesterday at the marriage thing. A challenging question that Kathy gave me was, how could you do everything you did in the military and as an athlete, but when it comes to our family, that you'll quit? And that was that question that radically impacted me and made me face the fact that I had quit on being a husband, being a father, being that young 17-year-old kid that joined the Marine Corps to do something important with their life. And I quit on my own health and what and desire to live. And so I decided to get back in the fight. And it was a man from Rochester here, happened to be in Texas, but a man from Rochester, who stepped in my life and introduced me to Jesus Christ and then mentored me for a period of 1 year. And since that, coming on the other side of that, we realized that we had the solution to this PTSD thing. Not that the military has a monopoly on PTSD. People suffer all kind of hardships of life, but we found that we had the solution. And so Kathy and I have decided to share it with others. And so we started the Mighty Oaks Foundation in 2011. And since then, that's all we've been doing is sharing what we discovered through a relationship with Jesus Christ.
That's outstanding. We're going to learn more about the Mighty Oaks Foundation. And you got some information. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Kathy, do you want to add to the story a little bit?
Since you were asking about just a little bit about our story, I too grew up in a divorced family and dealt with the rejection of my parents and just searching to be wanted and loved. And when I met Chad at 17 years old and we got married at 18, I thought all that what I was looking for was found, and put all my hope and trust into this man and had 3 children right away, busy with life. And then everything I thought was what that was going to happen didn't happen. My Prince Charming broke my heart. I felt very alone in my parenting, taking care of the children alone. And then the struggles came along with him being diagnosed with post-traumatic stress, and that turning into our marriage falling apart. And so that was a little bit about my background, and then experiencing God and our restoring our marriage and us allowing to bring hope to other marriages now have been a real blessing to us.
Well, you certainly brought a lot of hope yesterday. And one of the things I'll say before we get into some of the questions is that there is something here for everybody. You don't have to go, well, I wasn't in the military, I don't have PTSD. By the time this interview is done, there will be something that will speak to some part of your life that I think will benefit you. And that's why it's so exciting. It's not so much a niche, and there's nothing wrong with bringing in niche guests, and we do. But this is for everybody. So I'm going to jump in a little bit, Chad. Let's talk about your MMA career. You're successful, very highly ranked, number 6 in the world. And so we talked a little bit, and you have this in one of your books. I believe it's chapter 9 of Unfair Advantage, something like that. And you had a fight against Humberto De Leon in Houston. It was a violent fight, and it was significant for many reasons, not only tactically in the fight, but then also some of the highs and lows that came with that whole event. And how Kathy engaged you after the fight, and then we'll have you share that story. And Kathy, if you want to chime in after with your thoughts as well.
Yeah, 2010, I was in Strikeforce, which for those who are MMA fans at the time, Strikeforce was the number two show in the world. In fact, it was owned by the UFC. And so at that time, you know, I was the undefeated, one of the top-ranked fighters. And this kid, Humberto De Leon, who was up and coming, and I had the opportunity to fight him in Houston, a Toyota Center, which is 10,000-person arena.
Wow.
Very big event on Showtime. And man, I trained so hard for that fight, and all the media going up to it was kind of like I was the older guy, he was a young upcomer, and so I was getting called the old guy. I was getting called because I'm a grappler and he's a striker that I wouldn't want to strike with him. So my ego kind of got the best of me. I wasn't in a great place at that time, and actually, instead of doing my normal thing and taking guys down and submitting them, I decided to stand and strike with this, you know, really.
And you talk about grappling and striking, so explain a little bit. So what's the difference between a grappler and a striker?
Well, a grappler would be more wrestling on the ground, trying to get a choke or an arm lock or foot lock or something like that, submit the person. And a striker would be someone standing up trying to punch or kick the person.
Yeah.
And so I went outside of my strengths into his strengths and stood in the middle of the cage with him and in front of 10,000 people, and we just had this violent fight. And we were punching each other, kicking each other in the face. I kicked him in the face several times and knocked his mouthpiece out, and the guy just would not go down. He kept coming, and I felt like I was doing really good, but out of nowhere, I didn't even see it coming, but I got hit, and I found myself sitting right on my butt.
How'd he get you? What'd he get you with?
When I threw a kick, he threw an overhand right.
Okay,
And it just knocked me right in my butt. Yeah. And I remember when I was sitting
down. Well, it's easy. You only have one foot. You're kicking, you only have one foot. It's easy to get knocked down.
Yeah, he just took the kick and just threw that.
Trying to protect you there a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I remember just sitting on the ground and thinking, I can't believe I just got knocked down. And he swarmed on me and was trying to finish me. And I got up, and I'm really tactical and a fighter. I'm very composed. But in that moment, I wanted to win so bad that I just got up and just started swinging for the fences and fighting so hard. And it was a back and forth, and I ended up going to a split decision, and I won. And so when I got my hand raised, I remember being so it's all the pressure, the 3 months of training for a fight, all the work that you put in when you win and get your hand raised is just like all the pressure, 1,000 pounds comes off.
Yeah.
I remember being like so excited, but you know, in the reality of that moment really came back to me almost instantly, because while I had fought so hard in that fight to win this another notch on my record, meanwhile, of those 10,000 people, Kathy wasn't in an auditorium because I wasn't fighting for the most important fight.
Right.
Me and Kathy were separated at that time. And this is the reality of like fighting so hard for this sport. And then meanwhile, my family's falling apart. My wife is devastated. My children are brokenhearted. And I'm putting all this energy into this fight and not the most important fight I should be fighting.
Hmm.
I think the realization of that led me into a really deep and dark place.
Yeah. So you had some professional success, but you had some personal shortcomings, and clearly a lot of times we, as men, over-identify a professional success and under-identify a personal success, and I think maybe that's what happened.
I mean, while that's an MMA fight, it's no different than putting in focus on a promotion at work or putting, extra hours in.
Right.
You shouldn't be, when you're not focusing on the most important things in your life.
Yeah. Kathy, what was it like for you to see, Chad, the winner in the ring, and I don't mean to apply this negatively, but somewhat the loser at home. I don't mean that characterially.
I was really hoping he was going to get knocked out and lose, is what I was really hoping for.
You sound like my wife.
Then he won, and amazing. I'm at home, brokenhearted, and he's having a great time. I was pretty hurt. But to see him, fighting for this fight, fighting in his ability to lose the weight, to cut the weight he has to do, train like he trains, and just put the effort into that. While we're actually going through the process of selling our home, moving into two different places. We've been married for 15 years at this point, and seeing our kids just going through this devastation of a soon-to-be divorce.
Yeah.
It was no fun watching him look like he's on top of the world and not fighting for me and our children.
Did you have feelings of resentment toward him?
Oh, yes. I was definitely resentful towards him. I mean, this was I was definitely in a bad place and dealing with some serious bitterness, which I came to a point that I knew I couldn't live with anymore.
Yeah.
Because growing up in that divorce home, my parents, my father was so bitter towards my mom and hated my mom so much. Even though they divorced when I was 2, I had to watch them just be so angry with each other and hate each other, and I didn't want my kids to deal with that.
Yeah.
So
do you feel that some of the behaviors you saw in your parents' marriage, did that carry over into how you related to Chad in your marriage?
I would say no. I would say maybe that I had just recognized it so early and knew I loved my kids so much that I knew I did not want them seeing the same thing, at
right.
least on my
yeah.
end.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I caught that at an early stage.
Yeah, yeah, outstanding. So obviously your marriage has gone through these ups and downs, and but thankfully it's in a great place. And I don't know if that's what you're referring to. I think you sent me an email, great, ha, ha, ha. So I don't know if that, but I think it is in a great place. But tell us about what led you both to growing apart, how you began to grow together, and then Chad, I think it was either Chad or Kathy, one of you said how you learned about the difference between liking each other and loving each other. So either one of you can start, but...
I think for me it was really realizing that, and it was what we talked about yesterday, you have to be intentional about your marriage.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the most important relationships you have in life outside of your relationship with Christ. And and so going through this division was simply because we didn't know how to be married. No one had modeled it for us. We both came from divorced homes.
Yeah.
We never were intentional about it, and not to blame it on our parents, but we weren't intentional about it. So we inevitably, when we face the hardships of life, we're going to naturally grow apart. And there was a deep bitterness. I mean, my actions definitely look worse on the outside, but I resented Kathy for things. And so for not understanding, or not that she should have understood, but this was my feelings at the time. Like, she should understand what I'm going through. She's
right.
not there for me. And so this is just this division and bitterness towards us. And I mean, it got really, our marriage, I would say the best description of it in its darkest times was our marriage was dead. I mean, I would spend many nights in my gym or at a friend's house or sleeping in my kid's bedroom. And, I told the marriage couples yesterday, one of the probably loneliest places I've ever felt in my life is not like on some mountain in Afghanistan. It was in my own bed with my wife's back turned to me in this dead marriage. And so how do you turn that around when you just because you decide, okay, I want to be married and I want to work this out, it's still hard to turn those emotions around and actually fall in love with that person again that you think you could even like them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it was a very intentional process. It was a decision, despite the way my emotions felt. And I think for Kathy, I can't speak for her, but I believe from observing her, it was a decision she made as well, despite the way she felt, despite what I had done, to choose to love me. And that's what we talked about, love and like, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm thirsty right now, so I like this bottle of water. Like, when I take a sip of it, it makes me feel good. I can't choose whether I like it or not. I just do or I don't. But you can, your spouse, right? Your spouse is someone you have to choose to love or not love, despite how you feel. Right? I might not like her at times, and I know plenty of times she didn't like me. But we choose to love each other and make the decision despite how we feel emotionally, because through marriage and through life, you're going to have times that are good days and you're going to have times that are bad days.
Yeah.
And through those bad moments, you have to make that choice and decision, I'm going to love them anyway.
Absolutely. And that's a biblical concept. As a Christian, at this church, we teach that love is a decision. It's ultimately a decision. You know, you hear these soap operas or Hollywood, I fell out of love and everything. But love is a decision. Now, like is an emotion. So like can come and go, right? And but love is a decision. It's volitional. And like is emotional. So I think that's a helpful distinction.
I hear people say all the time, I fell out of love. We don't love each other anymore. It's like, no, you just don't like them right now.
Exactly,
it's really going on.
Right.
But you could still choose to love them anyway.
Absolutely. Outstanding. And you had to make that choice, yeah. Kathy?
I was just thinking, that saying, the grass looks greener on the other side. Well, just water your own grass.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's making that choice to,
exactly.
like we were telling them yesterday, that we learned each other's love language. And that was a choice to love each other through that love language. And I always say that crazy circle stopped and started going the other way, So it was really a nice change in our marriage.
Spend a second on love language. So I'll briefly identify it, then maybe you could talk about each other's love language. Love language means that you may be expressing love to your spouse, but they may not receive it because that's not their filter of how they interpret love. And so there's certain things that you might think help them feel love, but they don't receive that. And in fact, I think our great friends at First Bible are having Gary Chapman do the love language, a little plug for those guys, later this year. And I think Sue and I are going to try to go there. So tell us, what are Chad's love languages? Chad, what are Kathy's? Just to give everybody a feel for how this works.
Well, we all know what his first love language would be.
Violence?
Violence, yes. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yes. And then his second love language, we know what that would be.
Yeah.
I would say that affirmation, words of affirmation, mm-hmm. are huge in his love languages as well. So actually, I think that maybe both of those two would have to take all three positions, but just really learning how to speak to my husband with kind words, mm-hmm. and show him my appreciation was a huge change, because of the fact that we had such a horrible marriage. All that was really coming out was just horrible things.
Yeah.
And things that would remind him of his past, because I was in such a stage of brokenness, and he seemed to be just totally fine. And I thought, did he forget what he had did to me? Maybe if I remind him, maybe then he'll feel the way I feel and then be sorry.
Now, you call it remind. What do we call it? Nag.
Yeah, nagging.
Yeah. Chad, what are Kathy's love languages?
For me, I know Kathy's top three love languages are security. She needs to feel secure and safe in our marriage. She needs quality time with mm-hmm. me, and she loves to have acts of service. And so just doing little things around the house. And she doesn't expect much, just the fact that I would make a little effort in things, because I'm always really busy with the foundation and stuff. And so I try to make it a point to do any kind of acts of service around the house. And, so those are the three things that I know she needs, and I try to at least once a day, touch on those things in
some way or another. And the top needs that they both mentioned are pretty much universal. Men need to feel respected for what we do. If we don't get that, we will definitely feel hurt, ladies. And then ladies, you need to know that you're affirmed and your security is all provided for by your husband. I think those are two universal. So
Very common.
I want to talk to you both about Chad's PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, for those who didn't know what that stood for. After all these tours of duty in Afghanistan. So what was it about Afghanistan that contributed to your PTSD? Was there one particular event or series of events? Just take us through the personal challenge, how you defeated it, how you help others today. And then Kathy, after that, tell us how you responded and acted to protect yourself and your family during this time when Chad was acting harmfully. Because you said, well, I really didn't, it's nothing special. And I go, oh, what you did was incredible. And then maybe you could talk a little bit, weave in the get off the X story.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll start off with that
story. Yeah. Yeah.
So I had a really unique job in Afghanistan. I was, as a 4th Recon Marine, but I was assigned to a JSOC task force, a Joint Special Operations Command task force, as what's called an advanced force operator, which would mean, would go like just two of us, or maybe me and some local nationals, in plain clothes and go out and do kind of all the forward clandestine logistical work for the operation. And so oftentimes, being alone and being with another local or something, we're just in civilian clothes, civilian vehicles. And this particular day, I was with one other guy, he was a Navy SEAL, and we were in civilian clothes. We didn't have much for weapons, we each had a pistol, and we were in a Toyota Prado, which is like a 4Runner.
Yeah.
We were driving into the eastern side of the city of Kabul, which is the capital city, and on a road called Jalalabad Road, and we looked behind us and we noticed a Hilux pickup truck loaded with guys that looked like the Taliban. They came out of, mountains, big beards, dusty clothing on, AK-47 assault rifles, even an RPG, a rocket propelled grenade launcher. Oh. And my joke is, how many Taliban can you fit in a Hilux pickup truck?
I don't know how many.
The answer is one more, right? That's an idea, like how many people, and these guys are like piled in this truck. And we were like, man, these guys look like they're up to no good. I hope they're not following us. And so we did this technique called deviating your route. So I took like the block took a right off Jalapa Road, made the block, and when I came back on Jalapa Road and turned right, they were following us this whole detour.
Wow.
And so it confirmed to me that they were following me, but it also confirmed to them that I knew they were following me. And so it worked both ways, and it began a chase. And if anybody's ever been to a third world country, you know the traffic is really bad, right? Even worse than probably downtown Rochester.
Yeah, right.
And so the traffic started getting really congested as I went into the city to try to lose them. And I get to this intersection, major intersection called Massoud Circle, and the traffic just choked up there. And when I got to this intersection and the traffic started to stop, I had to stop my vehicle. And the truck came around the side of us, it cut us off and parked about 20 yards in front of us. And a few guys jumped at the back. I remember the passenger opened the door and he had his AK-47. He's looking right at us, put his hand up for us to stop. And it was a bad situation. And that's the X, right? That's
right.
To talk about being stuck on the X. And a couple of things you learn in training and as a recon Marine, you learn about the X is, number one, you have to realize that you're on the X, right? You got to realize you're in a bad situation.
Right.
Number two, you have to get off the X. You can't stay there. If you stay there, something bad's going to happen. And you train for these scenarios all the time. And I actually trained for this scenario as a roadblock technique. And so I hit my guys and I aim my vehicle towards theirs. And one of my favorite memories of Afghanistan is my smash in the front of that truck and the little Taliban guys go flying out the back. And you know, we got off the X.
Yeah.
And moved forward and did what we were trained to do. If we would have stopped on the Massoud Circle that day, if we would have stopped on the X, we would have probably put up a heck of a fight, but the truth is we would probably have been killed or taken.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, if I fast forward, you know, coming home a few years later from my last deployment in Afghanistan, I was found myself stuck on the X again.
Hmm.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I didn't follow those two simple rules though. I didn't identify I was on the X.
So again, the theme of early on, you do it professionally. But on a personal level.
Yeah. And by not identifying it, not wanting to admit from shame or guilt or whatever,
yeah.
Because of that, I didn't get off of it. And for a period of 3 years, I dealt with this thing, and it almost cost me everything. Almost cost me hair. It almost cost my family. It almost cost my own life. And, you know, where I get asked all the time, was there an incident that happened, a PTSD incident? And the truth is, there was a lot of incidents
I
could relate it to. But I think for me, it was this slow creep. It was this... they call it cumulative stress disorder, where you accumulate stress over time. It just builds up and builds up and builds up. And it was one moment to where I was running around Afghanistan in the mountains, you know, me and my buddy and or some local nationals, and I felt like totally fine. And the next moment, I had this overwhelming fear come over me. And as soon as fear crept in, it just crushed me.
Mm.
And I started having anxiety, and my face would go numb, my arms would go numb. Sorry, my throat was
so psychosomatic, really.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, these physiological effects were overwhelming.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't want to say anything in the job I was in because I felt like people would think I was weak, and so I pushed it down. And eventually, it caught up to me, and it crushed me. I had to come home, and I was diagnosed with PTSD. And Kathy and I had no idea what it was, how to deal with it. And it was something by not admitting, dealing with the panic attacks, and the shame of that. You know, we spent 3 years, and ended up with almost divorcing and me almost taking my life.
Right. So you come back home after your time in Afghanistan with PTSD, and you're taking it out on your family in some ways.
Sure. I'm frustrated. I'm scared. I'm angry.
Yeah.
There's different phases of it.
I mean,
I think initially it manifested in anger and a very intense. It was very intense, like everything I did, and so it manifested there. And then there's a moment to where I was just broken and weak, and then the medication came and that kind of took some of that edge off, and now I became angry again and intense and very self-centered, very kind of reckless behavior, self-destructive behavior.
Mm-hmm. And so you had to deal with that, Kathy. You talked a little bit, I think you downplayed it, but I was like, wow, your motherly nature came over. How did you deal with it personally, and how did you help the kids work through this tough season and Chad's emotions and life?
Yeah. First, when he first came home, I felt like, whatever this is, we can deal with it, because at first he was very quiet. He was kind of childlike, just scared, didn't talk much. It's almost like he just needed me to comfort him.
Right.
And that lasted for about 2 months or so. And then the anger and the rage started. And then what that led into at times of him becoming so angry and irate that he would actually get threatened with suicide, and there were times that he would become so bad in that moment that he would actually go into his closet with his gun. And he wanted, he was really acting out like, you know, he wanted me to come rescue him.
There was a cry for help.
Yes.
Passively, yeah.
But it was very scary. So for me, all I thought of was, I need to get to safety. I need to get my kids to safety. It's not that I didn't care about him at the time. He looked at it like I was abandoning him.
Right.
And all I was doing was, I'm angry too, what you're putting me through. And that is not a healthy place for me to go. And my kids definitely don't, we need to get out of here. And so at the time, the younger two, Haley and Hayden, would follow me really easy because they were scared too. But Hunter, he was, but dad needs help, but dad needs help. Mm. And then he started becoming, forming his own opinion and like headed to dad. And that scared me because not every time could I get him out of there. Mm. He was already about my size already. There was no way I could make him come with me.
Right.
So it just got scarier and scarier when he would do that. And so, I would just, my biggest thing was just get me and my family to safety in those times.
Right. So you overcame PTSD and not only overcame it personally, but now you're helping others overcome it through the Mighty Oaks Foundation. Tell us a little bit about your victory over PTSD, how that has led to your outstanding ministry, Mighty Oaks Foundation.
Yeah, well, I mean, after Kathy gave me that challenge when we were separated and introduced me to Steve Toth, and it was Steve and I sitting at a Starbucks and me telling him that, you know, I had a plan to fix my life, and he looked at my plan, which I had written on paper, and slid it over to me and said, well, you're going to fail. It doesn't have anything to do with your relationship with God. And I had tried everything at this point, right? I tried the pills. I'd been through counseling. I tried the MMA and jiu-jitsu. I thought that would solve it because I couldn't think about Afghanistan while I was grappling, right?
Yeah.
But none of those things had worked.
Right.
So I was at a point in my life to where, you know, why not? You know, why not give this guy a chance? Why not try this God thing? And so I submitted my life to Christ through the mentorship of Steve Toth, and he mentored me for an entire year through Biblical Manhood. And through that process, we found, you know, restoration in our marriage. I found hope again, and I felt like I discovered purpose. One of my favorite quotes is Mark Twain: "The two most important days in a person's life is the day that they're born and the day that they find out why." For me, like, I felt like in that moment, like, I found out why. Like, God had allowed me to get through this. I don't think God put me through that.
Right.
But he allowed me to experience that because he trusted me to be able to share it with others. And so me and Kathy made a decision that we wanted to share it with others. It wasn't like we decided. It was almost like an obligation. Like, if I found the cure to cancer, like, you felt obligated to share it. Like, that's how we felt, because I discovered that I wasn't alone. When you're going through something like that, you think you're the only one.
It's a lie, isn't it?
Be as depressed as me. No one could, his marriage could be as bad. And the truth is, I wasn't the only one. There's 22 Veterans Day at a time taking their life. There's divorce rates are astronomical in veterans. And Camp Pelham, it's 80% for combat veterans. And so I wasn't the only one, but I had this solution, and I wanted to share it. So we started Mighty Oaks Foundation. We had no idea what we were doing. We just had a heart and to pay it forward. And God had put that burden on our heart, and we wanted to be obedient in it.
Oh,
and
man.
So to date, that was 2011.
Right.
And, 7 years later, we've reached over 100,000 with the active duty troops with the message of Mighty Oaks and what God has done in our life. And then we have our intensive one-week program. We do 30 of those per year, and which is what Steve did for me in a year. We do it in 1 week. It took me a year. It takes most people a week. So we do 30 of those a year. We've had 2,000 graduates, and despite those high suicide rates, we've had zero suicides.
Unbelievable. Zero. Unbelievable. Kathy, anything to add about your experience and seeing how God has worked through your experience to start the Mighty Oaks ministry?
Yeah, Chad always says, here I'm doing everything she prayed for. You know, at first it was hard to accept this change, and then we're going through this healing process, and then now God puts it on our heart to start helping others that are dealing with those similar struggles. And I thought, I'm not even done bleeding yet. Putting me in this position to start helping others. But it was such a huge process it was such a huge gift in our healing to help others and to be able to share our past and what we're going through and how we're moving forward, because that's really what it was. It wasn't how I came through on the other side. It was how we're moving forward now.
Right.
And so that was such a gift to us to start.
It is, and it makes sense. We say this a lot here, is that the Bible teaches that the way to receive is by giving. It's very counterintuitive, and we say that it certainly applies financially, but it applies in every area of life. When you give yourself to other people, you receive back. And this is a universal, I could show it again and again in Scripture. So you just did what God was teaching you in Scripture and saw the fruit of it. Now, right now, suicide's big issue in our country. Shows like 13 Reasons Why, you know, are getting glamorized, and despite all the warnings of counselors and psychologists, they still show it. And so we have this tension where we say we're against it, but then we're like a moth to the flame showing shows like this. When you're in this dark place, what helped you break out of it, Chad, and what helped you, Kathy?
For me, like, it was this, almost like Kathy said, it was like a desperation. Like if you're on top of the roof of a burning building and you feel like the only way to escape is to jump. Like, it feels like, I mean, knowing that that's all, my only way out.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. I never had a desire, like, I want to end it all. I don't want to experience this pain anymore. It was, I created this mess and hurt so many people that don't deserve to be hurt. And they're going to be sad without me, but they're going to be better off. It was that conclusion that it came to my mind. Mm. So I heard a lot of people say it's a selfless decision, but I think the hardest thing that I have to do at Mighty Oaks is deal with the family members of those who have taken their life in the veteran community.
Yeah.
You know, we go to churches like this around the country and speak, and we're in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. And every time I would, you know, give my testimony, I always hold up like a Mighty Oaks flyer and say, you know, our program, by the way, our program's free. We pay for everything. We pay for the airfare. And so I give the invitation, and we'll do it here today. Any veterans, and you know any veterans, could go to our program. And so I did that at this church. And there was a lady named Heather and her husband Pete, who was a Marine. They were sitting in the audience, and Pete was suffering from PTSD. And, you know, Heather, of course, did the nudge that probably some of you did today. Like, yeah, you need to go to that. The wife nudged him. And he said, no, I don't want to take that spot from someone else. Well, you know, 6 months later, Pete, you know, stood in the back of a pickup truck surrounded by policemen, and he had a pistol at his head. And the last thing he said was, tell my wife I love her, and I'm doing this for her. Hmm. And he pulled the trigger. And, you know, I remember Pastor Ron Woods of that church called me, and Kathy and I ended up there and met with Heather. And Heather wanted to share the other side of that story with veterans. So she came to our program probably 20 times to talk to veterans. Most incredible, courageous woman.
Yeah.
And she told the other side, and she talks about how when Pete was at the morgue and he was laying on the metal table, and she would put her head on his chest listening for the heartbeat, and how his mother would never be the same, and how when she needs him in the middle of the night, he's not there, and how it's not better. She said something that really resonates with me. She said Pete thought he was going to, by doing that, he was going to take away everyone's pain, but all he did was transfer his pain to everyone that he loved. And I think about me back there believing that same lie that Pete believed, that they may be sad, but they're going to be better off, and they're not going to be better
That's
off.
That's right.
Suicide leaves such a wake of destruction and pain behind. And, you know, it's a truth that we have to share with people, because, you know, many people go through dark times like that.
Yeah.
I think that's the answer.
Yeah. You, we talked a little bit about some references. So, obviously, Mighty Oaks, I don't know if we can pull them up on the screen, but Mighty Oaks clearly will do that in its context for servicemen, and that we'll talk more about that. Another site that Chad recommended is a site called biblicalcounselingcoalition.org, and if that's of some help, you can look at that again, biblicalcounselingcoalition.org. And then one of our members, Rich Hartung, came and talked to some of the staff last week, I believe, or week before, and he mentioned if you really are in a quick need, quick strike situation, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, if you want to write down the number, 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-273-TALK, and there is hope. There is hope, and I think, Chad, your words of wisdom that you transfer pain to others, you don't eliminate it. Kathy, tell us a little bit about the role Jesus Christ has played throughout your whole life and all the challenges you've faced.
Yeah, so when I completely just said, I'm done. I can't do this on my own. God, I need you. That's when victory started happening, because for many years I tried to do it on my own.
Yeah.
I tried to take this pain on my own. I thought I was giving forgiveness. In fact, I even got to a point where I just, when I was in church, I thought maybe forgiveness is just for those good girls in church or something that can do this, and I just can't. But it wasn't until I fully surrendered and gave it all to the Lord. And that was something that I had to do daily. It wasn't just a one-time, okay, it's yours. It was a daily choice to surrender every day and ask God to help me to forgive Chad the way he forgave Chad. And then, of course, restoring our marriage helped me to see Chad the way you see Chad, and helped me to love Chad the way you love Chad again. So that was really sum it up really short of how I just had to completely engage in my relationship with him and fully trust in him to move forward.
Right, and it's important. Forgiveness isn't just an event, it's a process.
Yeah.
Right. Chad, how about you? Same question.
Yeah, I think for me it was the realization that God does have a plan for our life, and it's a good one. And, Jeremiah 29:11
yeah.
is one of my favorite verses. And for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you a hope in the future. To know that despite what I'm going through, what I've been through, that God has a plan for us. It's a plan for a hope. It's a plan for a future. And that it's not, it doesn't have to be bad if I choose to just step in his will. I think oftentimes, one of the biggest things I think I deal with veterans is their lack of purpose in their life. And we're always trying to find our own purpose when the truth is we're called to be in God's purpose. We're called to be in his will. And we could choose to step into God's will anytime. But we're off on our own, seeking our own purpose and our own will in our own lives, and we feel lost because we're all lost.
Right.
And so it's the simple choice of understanding the truth that God does have a plan for me, stepping into God's will for my life, and I believe that's the answer for anyone that's struggling. I believe the practical answer is be plugged in that body of Christ, be plugged in that church, be plugged into other believers who are going to help carry you along, because even if you're a believer, you're going to have hard days and you have to be surrounded by the body of Christ. And so I think that's probably one of the most important practical steps is to be plugged in.
Why don't you just tell everybody here, how they can become a Christian? How can they find a personal relationship with God through Jesus Christ? You could either tag team on it or however you want to do it.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, the Bible clearly says that we only have to acknowledge who Christ is and what he's done for us and accept him to be our Lord and Savior, to understand that, the mistakes that we've made, the stumbles that we've had in our life, or sin against God, and we can't ever pay the price for that sin.
Right,
so God sent his son Jesus to die on the cross for us for that sin in our place, and has given us life through that. And he rose from the dead, and when we acknowledge that he rose from the dead and conquered sin and death for us, and we can accept that gift at any time. We accept that gift. When we accept that gift, we're in a relationship with him. And then I think beyond that decision to do that and give God that chance like I did, and he'll show up.
Yeah.
It requires beyond that decision, I think, to be around other believers that can help carry you along. Because that decision's one thing.
Right.
I made the decision at 14 years old, and I believe it was a real authentic decision.
Yeah.
But there was no discipleship beyond that. And so I didn't know how to live that decision out until I was 20 years later. Before I learned how to live that decision out. And so I think that's where the body of Christ, the church, comes in.
Right.
Places like you you have here.
Right.
For these, when you make the decision to step into that.
Yeah. Kathy, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, not much. He handled that. But, I come from a family of unbelievers. And one thing that my father says is, well, first of all, he doesn't want to step foot in a church because he's like, I'm going to catch on fire. And that is not the case, guys. But just showing up, and you don't have to get yourself together. I've heard so many people, well, maybe once I stop smoking, then maybe I can do that.
And that's a big myth, isn't it?
Yeah, it's such a lie of the enemy. You don't have to be perfect. In fact, it's not until you accept Christ in your heart that your heart starts to change to align to the life he's called you to have.
That is a great contribution. That's outstanding. Now, this is really cool because This is the first time, we've known about it for a while, but this is the first time Chad is going public with an announcement. But you have a real excitement. Their story is phenomenal, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, wouldn't it be great if other people could hear their story? Wouldn't it be awesome? Well, listen to this. Chad and Kathy, you want to make really the first time. I can't believe our little church here is part of it, but go ahead and share.
We were approached almost 2 years ago now about making a motion picture about our story. And so the books, An Unfair Advantage and Our Marriage Advance book, were we gave away the rights to those books, and they're making a motion picture movie by LD Entertainment, a major Hollywood production company. Not going to be a Christian genre movie, so
yeah.
We're able to reach beyond the Christian realm. And
which I affirm. I think that's a great decision.
And it'll be the scale of it'll be probably in every theater in America here in 2020.
So, isn't that exciting? Wow. Congratulations. That's unbelievable.
We're excited, but it's scary and all at the same time. But
yeah.
We really believe and trust the process that the core of the story is not going to be our story, but it's going to be the story of Christ through our lives. And
right.
That's what we've communicated through the process so far, and that's what we really believe is going to happen.
Oh, Kathy, are you excited?
Pastor Vince, you want to know something funny? When I talk about Chad, I think I shared this yesterday. Everybody thinks, if they haven't met Chad yet, they think he's this big guy, you know? And then, so we're talking about who can play Chad, and we're like, The Rock can play Chad, you know? And then Chad said, no, it's more like Kevin Hart. Chad's only 5'3", so.
Hopefully when he's not drunk like at the Super Bowl, but yeah. It's outstanding. I mean, this is, I'm so happy. And I told Chad, we are committed right as in Rochester, because Chad has roots in Rochester. A friend of mine introduced me to Chad last year. We had him. It's great. Steve Toth, his brother Chip, is one of my best friends. Just coincidentally, Chip has spoken here and totally of God. And we are going to promote it in Rochester when it kicks off, aren't we? It's going to happen. There's no doubt. A couple things. So, at the end of our service, you'll get a chance to meet Chad and Kathy. Obviously, we ask you to be sensitive and efficient, but they have a number of books, a book called Pathway to Resiliency. Resiliency is just how you press through your problems and challenges. The Truth About PTSD. These books, by the way, all these books are given away free. When you buy these books, you not only get a personal benefit and an autograph, maybe a pic with Robichaux's, but you actually give them the funds where they give this to all the people in the military who receive them for free. Great book on marriage called Marriage Advance, Love Never Gives Up. And then, of course, the book that probably will serve as the spine or the backbone of the movie, and that's called, Chad sent me this when it came out earlier, later last year, I should say, An Unfair Advantage. So you can buy all these, and also I think I Italian manipulated a free shirt out of Chad, and he's got some of these shirts, so this is Get Off the X. There's only a few of them, so you better jump on it quick, and it's pretty awesome. Thank you for giving me that, Chad. And then one last thing before we pray is when you came in, you not only received the program with some ability to take notes and some other items on the back, you received this card. And if you would like to stay in touch, find out more. Briefly, Chad, you said something about a newsletter that's...
Yeah, so this is the first time we do this. We just realized that, we have a bigger net to cast to reach our veterans, and we want to be plugged into communities that God connects us to, like this one. And so there's a little tearaway at the bottom, just for your name and email address. And if you want to be plugged into what we do at Mighty Oaks, we'll send a special newsletter out and keep you guys posted on what we're doing with veterans. Again, we run 30 programs a year where veterans come to us, and then we do about 20 programs a year where we go to veterans on bases all over the United States. In fact, today was the first time we actually go out, and we have a team going to Ukraine to minister to Ukrainian troops and share the gospel with them. And so if you want to stay plugged into what we're doing, be part of it in any way, then please just...
Yeah. Tear it off, and then you could either, the best thing would be bring it to Chad and Kathy at their table when you buy a book. But if you want, you could tear it off, drop it in the offering, trustees and count team. If you get to segregate these, then we'll mail these to Chad and Kathy next week. So Chad and Kathy, it's hard to put into words how incredible this experience has been this whole weekend. So I want to stand up, and let's all pray for Chad and Kathy and their ministry. Let's all stand up if we could. It's a tremendous honor to work with wonderful, godly people. They're so real and genuine. So I want to pray for them both. Father in heaven, thank you so much for Chad and Kathy. I praise you and thank you that by your providence you brought them into my life and in the life of this church, and it's a blessing. I pray right now for Chad and Kathy. I pray first and foremost for their walk with you, that it would be strong and vibrant. Second, for their marriage, that it would continue to be a model for us, that no matter what challenges we go through, with Jesus Christ, we can overcome. And then third, for their family, that their children grow up to be godly. Protect Hunter as he gets ready to deploy to Afghanistan. And then for the Mighty Oaks ministry, that you would help them help others, not only with the PTSD, with suicide, with all the anxiety and all the transitional issues, but also to help people who go through the program see the wonderful love available through Jesus Christ. Thank you for that. And pray that our church would support these wonderful people and bring all the support we can so that we can have a stake, a share in this wonderful ministry. We ask this through Jesus Christ. Amen.